everyone, and welcome to another Bite, where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Jory, and I'm joined by Ariel.
Hey, friends.
Is it getting hot in here, or is it just the adobo? Today, we're headed to the Philippines for some tasty treats. Who knew ketchup could be made out of bananas? Not these sharks. Will they want to take a bite out of this company, or will they leave this founder hungry for more? You know the drill. Here's an ad. Is it just me, or does it feel like the marketing playbook is always changing? Much like the age-old question, to skinny jean or to not skinny jean, marketing strategies can come and go and come back again. Who can keep up? Luckily, HubSpot makes it their job to keep marketers on trend and on track to hit their goals. Their 2024 State of Marketing Report is the all-in-one guide for everything happening this year and how marketers can best approach it all. HubSpot surveyed more than 1,400 marketing pros across the world and curated the top trends they're thinking about. Sure, there's AI, but there's so much more. The report covers everything from increasing awareness and engagement to ensuring privacy and boosting efficiency and growth. You get all the info you need to shape your strategy for the year and keep on winning into next year. Don't get caught hopping on an old trend. Visit HubSpot.com/state-of-marketing to get your free copy of the report. So today in the tank, we have Phila Manila. And Phila Manila is brought to us by Jake, who is asking for $250,000 for 5% in his business, which is a $5 million valuation. Now, Phila Manila is solving the problem that there's not a lot of representation when it comes to Filipino flavors in the grocery store. So Filipinos are the third largest Asian American population, and their cuisine is the fastest growing in the U.S., but you can't get those delicious flavors at the grocery store. So enter Phila Manila, which is a Filipino-inspired product line, which includes banana ketchup, chicken adobo, and more to really introduce and expand the presence of Filipino foods at the grocery store. It's a set of curries and sauces so that American consumers can get those flavors that they know and love. So, Ariel, thinking about our product and our pitch and our founder, initial thoughts of Phila Manila.
I think this is great because it's able to fill a need in the market. I think our founder really did a great job of highlighting the fact that if you do go even to like an international market or supermarket, there's not a lot of representation for Filipino food. So I think he found a really great product, found a really great way to kind of position it, be able to bring something that like folks are really asking for. But I think the challenge that he's going to run into isn't necessarily consumers of Filipino foods or that love Filipino foods. I think it's going to be the non-Filipino food lover community and how you get them on board to trying, you know, something to, like a banana ketchup.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the easiest one to like associate with since we use ketchup so much in the US.
Yeah.
But like for some of the other things, like, you know, like the adobo or some of like the sauces that they have, that may be a little bit more challenging to get into. So I think it's a great like concept product-wise. There's definitely a need for it. I think it's just going to come down to that distribution. And if he does lean more into big box retailers, how are you able to expand beyond the ethnic foods or like international food aisles?
Definitely. And it's also difficult because it's a food product, right? So it's hard with digital marketing to really showcase how delicious and amazing this type of product could be for people that might not really understand what these flavors are quite yet and maybe like a little curious, but a little hesitant to be like, well, I even like this. So how would you start to spread awareness about something like this? Because banana ketchup is a great example. I was like, oh, Americans love sauces, right? And they're always looking for the next sauce. So maybe that's an easy win. But from a marketing standpoint, like, is this really the biggest challenge? Or is there a way that a founder like this who is doing like a food could achieve scale using digital?
Yeah. So I think there's a few ways. So when you think about like going digital and like achieving virality, usually there's a few commonalities in like what makes viral content. So does it drive influence? So does it drive influence within your friend circles or your social circles? Because more often than not, if people are engaging with your content for longer videos of time, or if they're sharing things, like the algorithm will like favor that and reward you with like more visibility and increased reach. The second is it really resonating from like either an emotion or like a shared experience base, which is actually where I think he should lean more into. And then the last is there any entertainment value or like general awareness value? Usually those three things you find in a lot of like viral pieces of content. I did do a bit of research, Dory, into food brands that did crush it in virality in 2020 when everything was so digital and we didn't have in-store food sampling.
Such a good point, yeah.
So there's a few brands that did a really good job with this. Magic Spoon cereal. I don't know if you saw like TikTok videos of it's only 4 net carbs in your cereal. So they had a really strong value that they were like presenting to audiences, which actually led to them getting more distribution in store. So I think they checked off the value piece. There was Omsom, which is the most similar brand that I could find. They're a Vietnamese sauce kit founded by two sisters. They actually go up against shelf against like Momofuku's take home brands. But because they were able to really sell that storytelling a little bit more, that's ultimately what led to their distribution. So I think for Philip Manila, who's trying to increase that awareness and get more folks to like try actual products for them, he really needs to either lean into like the emotion based of like, I miss grandma's cooking. I can't get it anywhere in any international store. I have to rely on Amazon for my spices. And half the time, it doesn't taste as good as when I can get home-cooked meals from like family back at home. So I think there's more of that emotional storytelling, nourishing yourself as you eat this food that he could lean a little bit more into to at least, you know, generate more interest in the product. And then actually tasting the product is an entirely different story. But I think you can get folks to that point.
I mean, yeah, if you've sold them on the emotions, I feel like, then you just make them hungry.
Exactly.
I was curious because this branding was super fun, right? It's very colorful.
I love it. I think it's bright. It's fun. It reminds you of the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I think it was very intentional. I think the only thing that I would call out is like when you go to their landing page, it's a little bit overboard. Okay. It's a lot of colors, a lot of things going on. I think for product packaging and standing out on the shelf, it doesn't hurt them as much as it does for like their core brand. I think they could maybe only pick like 2 or 3 colors. Just keep it a little bit cleaner. Mm-hmm.
I know that when you're doing research for like brand colors, especially like in the food industry, that desire to kind of get those bright colors.
Get all those reds.
Yep, exactly.
Get that hunger.
So when you have a very bright color on your branding color palette, how do you really balance that? Because you mentioned that you could choose like 2 to 3 of the different colors. Are there other ways that companies with bright colors could be optimizing those visual assets to make sure that they are really fun, but they aren't overwhelming at the same time?
My friend, the color wheel will tell you. Okay. So if you're looking at a color wheel, you can see what are some similar colors within the palette that are either cool tones, which he uses a lot of blue, and then he has a contrast color. So usually you have one very strong color and then something that's a little bit lighter. That's like the blue and the orange that he's kind of going with. Then for side text on like a social media image or text on the product itself, you could find something that's very close to either that blue or within like the same hue space. But I would keep it to like 2 to 3 colors max, or else it comes across there's just too much busyness going on.
Colors.
So my biggest messages should be in the biggest, brightest coloring, which is going to be the name of my brand. And then any additional information like slogan, taglines, reasons to believe, reasons to purchase this product, it's fine if it's black text or white text, you know, just make sure that it kind of sticks within that general color.
And I think really having that balance between those visuals are important. You know, this actually kind of reminds me of my favorite sauce, which is sriracha. So for those of you that don't know, sriracha initially started as a pretty humble business. I think it started back actually in the 80s and then gained momentum throughout the 80s and 90s. It was really in a lot of specialty stores. It was in a lot of international stores, and it operated almost entirely on like word of mouth. Then with the advent of what I'll call like foodie culture, sriracha from word of mouth had this explosion moment. And I think that's when you start to really see it kind of enter the mainstream. So it was able to really start to attract a entire new set of consumers that were in its initial base until it became essentially a household name today. So do you think because foodies is very much still like a subculture that influencer marketing here could be like a really good way to go? Because it seems like a lot of word of mouth and influencer marketing in early 2000, sriracha culture was what led to a lot of like sustainable success for, you know, just a small chili sauce. Do you think that kind of approach could work with Philip Manila in the same way to achieve scale?
That's such a good example with sriracha. Mm-hmm. I do think they could replicate a lot of that by leaning more into like foodie culture, yeah. even like for food trucks and partnering very locally.
With like French fries or something like poutine, but with banana ketchup.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially because there's so many restaurants these days that are like predicated on their sauce like offerings, right?
Yes. Like Chick-fil-A sauce, special sauce.
Exactly.
Like
it's, yeah. yeah.
You're reminding me of the green ketchup days that we had. Yeah. Back in our
Heinz purple and green ketchup. Yes. Remember that? What a call out.
They walked so sriracha could run.
Ooh, I don't know. But yeah, especially because it is ketchup, I think that there's just a lot of ways that they could navigate the consumer space really well, but then also think about creatively how they could be partnering with strategic businesses, businesses that might be known for like their French fries or things that folks are used to using ketchup on.
Yeah, get them in like packet form.
Partner with McDonald's. There you go.
Right.
So it was interesting because I felt like this product was really fun. So I thought it was going to be like a slam dunk with sharks. The numbers were clearly showing an exponential curve to the right.
Yeah.
Where they started at like 6K in 2020 and they had projected approximately $800,000 in 2023. I think where the sharks got lost a little bit is that they had raised $900,000 at an $8 million valuation. And I think this is where it gets tricky. We all know that valuation is made up, right? Sharks are always internally running calculations in their head of like what they actually think that the business is worth based on sales. And so to hear him coming in for $5 million when he had already sold it for $8 million, and that's not directly correlated with a concrete sales number, I think just lost a lot of trust. Kevin called their sales a nothing burger, which I had a little umbrage with because it was like, it's not nothing, but I can kind of see where that valuation might be a little scary. Lori, Mark, and Damon also quickly went out. And then we got like this really interesting counter offer when Daniel kind of entered the ring where Jake immediately started to go into royalties, which I thought was kind of interesting. I think Mr. Yeah. Wonderful is typically the person that first brings up the royalty card. Mm-hmm. This season of Shark Tank, I think I've heard it more from founders than the mm-hmm. actual sharks themselves. So I guess that speaks to a bit more of like a business savvy when it comes to the founders entering the ring this season. But he really started to try to do like 5% wholesale, 8% online sales. And it turned into sort of this like intense mathematical equation. Daniel was not having it. He was like, it's going to be 20% or nothing. And, you know, he was going to give Jake a little bit of leeway where he could get potentially 5% back. But ultimately, it seemed that simple was key in this Shark Tank episode because Jake did seal the deal for $250,000 for 20% and walked away with a shark, Daniel, who is definitely the foodie of the shark. So, you know, you'll love to see it.
Good pairing.
So I actually have a bit of Jory spoiler. I watched this Shark Tank episode, you know, as you do to prepare for the episode. And I was so won over by how fun the branding was
yeah.
that I actually ended up buying the Filamanila Shark Tank bundle.
Yes.
So TBD on if it gives me heartburn like Damon.
Oh gosh, I know that was rough.
It was rough to see, but I'm really excited to try it. I was talking to my husband and I was like, yeah, I ordered us banana ketchup. And he's like, I love that. Banana ketchup is so tasty. And I was like, wait, what?
He's had it.
And he's had it before.
Okay.
And granted, he's from New York, so he's used to a bunch of different cuisines. But that just tells me that there might not be a like, what is this reaction right. in as many households as we think. You know, he walked away with a Daniel Shark Tank deal and he walked away with $39 from Jory. So
yes,
that
and a Jory
is
deal.
Always a win-win. For those reasons, I'm in. Daniel made a great deal.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave, AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented.
The next wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.